So what are some of the things people call this? The Bible, the Word, the Good Book, the Holy Book. People call it by different things, and some people treat it with respect. Like, for example, when I was growing up, I was taught you never put anything on top of it unless you have a nice special cloth covering or something like that for it, because it's you don't want to bury the Word under something else. It's always first place. In my home, when I was growing up, there was a repository, a little special place where we kept the Lord's Word. And when we had worship as a family, we would worship there, open the Word in the repository. But what makes the Word holy? What is it about the Word that makes it different from other books or holy? Well, you might say the holiness of the Word lies in its content, but not just the history of people like Abraham or Isaac or Jacob, or the stories from very ancient times of the flood or the Tower of Babel or the creation. Now, those things are not what make the Word holy. Even things like the Psalms, which kind of open up our heart and direct our minds and thinking and feelings to the Lord and to our own emotional states, even things like the Psalms aren't by themselves holy. What's holy is that the Lord is present in those words. In fact, the Lord is so present in those words that when John was talking about the creation in his opening words of the Gospel of John, he said, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us." And he goes on to say, basically, in that Gospel, that the Lord Jesus Christ, who was born into the world, is the Word. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And what it's really saying is that the content is all about the love of God. The love of God is the creative energy, like the fire in the sun. It's the creative force that makes everything, and the guiding of that energy. You know how a dot matrix printer works? It's got all these little ink jets. And your computer's brain tells it to fire those ink jets as they move along the paper, or as the paper moves along them. And little bits of ink spurt out onto the paper, and the content of your computer is now printed on the page. Well, that takes guidance, that takes direction. That takes code. And that code is like the wisdom of the divine truth. All divine wisdom is in the Lord. And when it says the Word, we think about divine wisdom. It's God talking to us about what He loves. That wisdom came into the world in the person of Jesus Christ so that we could really get to know what God is like. And you know, you can read the stories, you can read the Psalms, you can read about all these different people, the history of the Israelites, their journey through the wilderness. You can read all those things and never get anything about the Lord in it. It goes right over your head because you're not aware, not only of how everything in the Word is kind of clothed in images or symbols, but you're also not aware that the Lord is actually talking to your mind as you look at the content. So it's like the computer is able to look at the printout and say, "Ah, yes, that's what I'm saying." If you look at it, you'll understand what's in my memory or in my mind. That's kind of what happens when we read the word. So Jesus was walking with his disciples. This is after he had died and was resurrected on the third day. Jesus was talking to two of his disciples. They didn't recognize him, walking on the road to Emmaus, and he started telling them about, and this is what it says, beginning at Moses, so that's the five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, beginning at Moses and all of the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. That's what we're told in the Gospel of Luke. So Jesus told his two disciples what the word was really talking about when they read the laws of Moses or the stories of creation, that it was all about him. And he showed them how everything in those stories was actually the states of mind of the Lord as he was growing up and be prepared to teach and reveal the divine to all of us. So, why is the word holy? Well, because it has all that great stuff in it. It's God talking to us about himself. But it's also a historical document. In the letter, it's a historical document about the history of the Jews and also the history of Jesus Christ when he was in the world. And also the visions and prophecies that we find scattered throughout, like in the book of Revelation, prophecy of Isaiah, those things. It's all those things that are historical. And you can just read and say, well, yeah, this is true history here. This is made up history here. This never could have happened here. But there must be some reason it's in there. So, you can read the Bible and think of it as a historical document, but if you think more deeply or you allow the Lord to talk about the states of the church, then you can begin to see that the Bible, like, for example, when it's describing the children of Israel coming out of slavery and then worshiping a golden calf because they don't know what happened to Moses, who's up on the mountain. It's a history of their spiritual states. You know, absolutely believe when they walk across the Red Sea and the water is parted and the Egyptians get drowned. Absolutely believe in God. And then the next moment, they say, God, who's God? Moses, what happened to this Moses fellow? We don't know. You better make us a new God out of gold. So they made this golden calf. And you can see there is the history of the state of religion in the world. It's not an external history. It's not really there to teach us about Joseph and Benjamin and other people. It's not about that. It's about what is the church in the world like when it's good, when it's not so good, when it's lost, when it's struggling, when it's turning away from God. Because you can see the church in all those different states. Opening up the seals of the book, and I read about talked to the children about opening up the seals and seeing those four horsemen. Okay? More stuff has been written about the four horsemen of the apocalypse than I could imagine. Because people say, what is this all about? And they imagine that this is prophecy about something's going to happen in the last days of the earth. And these things are going to actually happen on earth. And so there's all kinds of things written. And some people see it as symbolic. So maybe this horse represents this country or this ruler or this particular person who's going to come and lead a revolution or something. But the teachings of the new church show us that these horsemen are actually images of the way the human race thinks about the Lord. Because horses, whenever they're mentioned in the Bible, represent the thinking side of us, the understanding. Our mind is carried along by the horse of its understanding. And these different horses that John saw as the seals of the book were opened are symbols or images of how the Lord is received. And the rider on the white horse with a crown on his head and a sword in his hand to bring victory, that's a picture of the power of the understanding of the word when people see the Lord there and follow him. And it brings salvation, it brings victory over evil, and it brings deliverance and happiness and eternal life. All of that is in those images that are described in that story. But then you have the red horse, and it's not a pretty red. It's a fiery red, and that rider is causing people to fight and kill one another. And you can almost see what that's like. You know, it's when we think about the word and we use it to justify our resentment, our hatred, our anger. We judge other people and we see them as having wronged us. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It's okay to get even, to hate them, to want to kill them. So that understanding of the word, when we take it and use it from selfish loves, destroys kindness in our hearts. And then there's the black horse, and black is like darkness or ignorance, and has to do with when the word is not understood or it's used to tell lies. Like that some people are going to go to hell because they weren't baptized. Or something like that. And finally, the pale horse is an image of the word when it is totally disregarded. And it says about the pale horse, the name of him who sat on it was death, and Hades followed with him, and power was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth. So that's the way the word tells us about the states of the church. You know, not the history, but the spiritual states of the church. And of course, each one of us is a church in microcosm. But collectively, we're a church as a small group. We gather worldwide, and we're a church in a larger sense, the whole of the Lord's kingdom, where people love and accept and follow him, is the church in the broadest sense. And so these things in the Word are talking about what the church is like in different times. And finally, the Word is holy because it's all about you. Yeah. It's all about you. If we read in our readings here, in the reading Secrets of Heaven, number 2253, it says, whenever we hear, see, or feel touched by something, the picture we form of it and the goals we adopt concerning it are instilled into our inner memory without our awareness. There it stays, so that not a bit of it is lost, even if it is erased from our outer memory. And I'll talk about inner and outer memory in a minute. The inner memory then is such that everything, absolutely everything we have ever thought of, said, or done from early infancy to extreme old age is imprinted on it in the finest possible detail, even if it looks vague and shadowy to us, as in we have a feeling, but we don't really understand that feeling. We would have a hard time describing it. That's what it's saying. Even if we don't get it, the quality of that feeling is inscribed on our inner memory. And when we go into the other world, this is the important part here, when we go to the other world, we take the memory of all these things with us and are gradually led to recall each of them. This is our book of life, which is opened up in the other life and by which we are judged. Think about that. Now, it's not that someone says, you go to heaven, you go to hell. It's not that kind of judgment. It's that we look at who we are and we see, on the basis of everything we've ever thought and felt, what the quality of our life has been, how we've been led, you know, where we're headed, where we are willing to go, how we are willing to grow, how we respond when we see someone else hurt, right? How we respond when we see someone else in need or suffering. Like the Lord said, I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty. You gave me to drink. Those reactions we have to the needs of others are planted in our internal memory. It's all about you. All about you. And that's part of what is meant in the story about the book that's sealed with the seven seals. Because it isn't just the Bible that's dark and obscure until the Lord opens it to us, but our own lives are dark and obscure. You know, we're just going along. But the Lord opens up so that we can see the quality of the things we love and care about, how we want to be. And you know that sometimes you want to be one way and you act the other way. You know, you want to be the greatest parent ever. You know, always be kind and loving and generous and listening to your children. And it doesn't work out that way, right? No. And the things in your internal memory aren't the, I remember when Joshua said this to me and stomped out of the room and slammed the door. No, it's the, I remember how it felt when somebody I love wanted to be separated from me. Those are the things that are in your internal memory. Who or what or where or why are absolutely unimportant. It's the internal reaction to life that is in our internal memory. And everything is there to be recalled, all of our thoughts and feelings. And the Lord opens this book. And in the next life, he allows us to see. And you know, sometimes you can look at the things you've done and you can feel shame. You can feel anger at yourself and perhaps the people who you think caused you to be that way. I remember being really angry at my child once because I felt like if you would just do the things I asked you to do, then I wouldn't be this horrible, raging parent who's yelling at you and wants to hit you. What's going on, though, is as the Lord opens up the book of my life to see, is I can see how much I want to be that loving parent. I can see how much I care for my children. I can see how I need the Lord's help because otherwise my self-centeredness, my need to justify my actions, my need to blame other people, all of those things are going to take over and I'm going to run with it. But that's not who I want to be. Our book of life, it is opened by the Lord little by little, and it happens in this world too. You know, you see things about yourself that you don't want to see. You see things in yourself and you say, I'm so grateful that the Lord has given me this. When we're ready, the Lord opens up and allows us to see our book of life in a way that promotes our growth. So on the front of the bulletin, I added a little quote. Yeah. On the front, it says it's all about you. And in it, Swedenborg writes, I should quickly explain what the inner meaning of the word is like in its narrative and prophetic parts. So narrative is like when the word is telling a story, and prophetic is like when the word is telling the children of Israel that if they do this, this is going to happen. What it's like, the inner meaning of the word. Where the narrative level mentions a number of people like Joseph and Simeon and Levi and all these other people, on the inner level, they certainly symbolize various attributes, but only within a single individual. The reason is that names signify qualities. And that's the way it is with everything in the Bible. That's why I say it's all about you. Because when you read the Bible and you read about Joseph and you see what happened to him, and you read about Benjamin, you see what happened to him, you read about Isaac and Jacob and you see what happened to them, and you think about them on a deeper level and you realize that it's talking about my states and all these different things are there, good and bad, all mixed together, and I'm being offered the opportunity to make sense out of them, sort them out as I read the word. So, as I said at the beginning, well, there's this task card in the back of your thing, and it says, this week you might read a story from the word and see if you see yourself, see your thoughts and feelings or actions described there. You might do that.